Rashi. Rashi was born in 1040 and died in 1105. He lived for 65 years. The reason why he's called Rashi, his name is Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki. Yitzchaki is his father's name. For some reason, they don't call him Rav Shlomo Ben Yitzchaki. They just call him Rav Shlomo Yitzchaki. He has a tremendous, tremendous, reputation. Maybe the greatest in all of Jewish history. We'll start off with his family and kind of move into his contribution and learning in a minute. Legend has it that his father threw an expensive jewel into the sea, into the ocean. This way, Goyim would not be able to worship Avodah Zarah. They wanted to use it for Avodah Zarah, and he was willing to make a tremendous sacrifice. And at the time, legend has it, he received Ruach HaKodesh, saying he would have a son who brings Torah to the world. And that son, obviously, with Rashi. Another legend is his mother was walking down a very narrow alleyway when two carriages came charging in her direction. She ran up against the wall and pressed herself in, and supposedly, as legend has it, the wall softened and accommodated her stomach. And the truth is there is a crevice in the wall of what's considered the Rashi synagogue even today. Rashi grew up, began learning as a young boy, and eventually had children. He had no sons. He had three daughters. Each of them were very, very famous. No, that's not true. Some of them were famous than others, but his grandsons were very, very famous. Three daughters. The legend has it as well. One of them was not so traditional in terms of her wearing tefillin all the time. There's one daughter of Rashi's who wore tefillin. It's worthwhile to know. The three daughters, number one is a daughter named Yocheved, and she married a man named Rav Meir ben Shmuel. Her first daughter was Yocheved. She married a man named Rav Meir ben Shmuel. He also learned in the city in Mainz, like Rashi did as well. And they had four children, one more famous, one more popular than the next. One, his name was Shmuel, and he was named after his grandfather. So his name was Rav Shmuel ben Meir, son of Rav Meir ben Shmuel. He was named after his own grandfather named Shmuel as well. His acronym, they call him the Rashbam. And the Rashbam is a famous commentary on the Gemara as well as Chumash. It's Rashi's grandson. The next son they had his name, one whose name was Yaakov. And his nickname was Tam. And they called it because of the pasuk Ish Tam Yoshev Olam, he sat and learnt. And that became the story of the Rabbeinu Tam. The next one was Yitzchak, and they called him Rav Yitzchak ben Meir, or the Rivam. All huge gedolei rishonim, all chachmei tosfos. We'll talk about Rabbeinu Tam at some point in time. Revolutionized the world of learning. The Rashbam revolutionized Ashkenazi commentary and Chumash. We'll get there as well. And he had another son named Shlomo, who probably was named after Rashi, died very young as well. That was his first daughter, Yocheved. He had another daughter named Miriam. She married a man named Rav Yehuda ben Nasan. They had a daughter named Alvina. They had a son named Yom Tov, who opened up a yeshiva in Paris. He wrote a commentary on Maseches Makos. Towards the end, it's found on Daf Yotes, Daf Chav Dalid. And the last daughter, in addition to Yocheved and Miriam, had a daughter named Rachel, who married and eventually got divorced to a man named Rav Elazar ben Shmaya. Interesting, they got divorced. It wasn't that common in a long time. That's the brief presentation of his family. What I'd like to do next is talk about the Torah he learned, the Torah he taught, who was Rebbeim were, and his tremendous contribution on learning. Yeah? I have no idea where we know it from. It could be they're recorded in other statements that we've shown him. It could be history books. I don't know. I got it from history books and things along that nature. I'm not sure where we know it from. Yeah? No clue. Never heard it. No idea. Rashi's Rebbeim, one of them was Rav Yaakov ben Yakar from Worms, and that's where Rashi learned in the city of Worms as well. He has another Rebbe from Worms, Rav Elazar HaGadol. Another Rebbe whose name was Rav Yitzchak ben Yehuda of Mainz, and the Rebbeinu Gershom as well. Those were four Rebbeim. In terms of Rashi's writings, really, 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 Rashi's commentary on Chumash is beyond popular and beyond well accepted. You can't even begin to grasp just how popular it was, how popular it is. In other words, not just does everyone learn Chumash and Rashi, but to the point where some of Rashi's comments are very, very often confused with what it says in the Chumash itself. You don't know if God said it or if Rashi said it. That just gives you a perspective of just how popular and well accepted Rashi was. Beyond that, there's halach. You're supposed to read the Shnayim Mikra V'yach Targum. You read the Chumash twice and the Targum once. The Mefarshim explained. If you read Rashi, that's good enough as Targum. You can replace Targum. Why was Rashi so well accepted? Why was Rashi so unbelievably popular? And I'd like to share a few thoughts as to why I think that's the case. Yeah. Yeah. For starters, he was one of the first major commentaries. But he wasn't the first. Rav Sajak only commented before him. There were others before him as well. But he was one of the four first commentaries. Beyond that, he was unbelievably short, unbelievably concise, and unbelievably to the point. He doesn't. Sometimes he's so short he doesn't even ask questions. He just responds to potential questions that exist. Rashi, beyond that, his style of learning was very important as well in terms of his popularity. He claims to be a pashtan. He claims to be someone who explains the pshat. It's difficult to understand that at first glance because most of the time Rashi's not quoting pshat, but rather he is quoting midrashim and gemaras. To the point where there's one of the commentaries on Rashi named the Sefer HaZikaron writes that Rashi wasn't really a pashtan. And even when he claims to be explaining pshat, what the Sefer HaZikaron says is that in this one particular situation, for example, Parak Yimel and Bereishis, Pasuk Ches, where Rashi says Lo Bati El Yashiv Pshuta Shel Mikra, he means right here, not in general. In general, he quotes Midrash, but this particular point, he quotes the pshat. However, that's not the standard explanation. Most people assume Rashi viewed himself as a pashtan. And the question is, what does he mean if he's quoting Midrash all the time? And I think in order to get a proper understanding of it, you have to realize that in France, during Rashi's time period, everyone learned and taught Midrashim. That's what they did. They learned and taught Midrashim. What Rashi did that was revolutionary is Rashi used the Midrashim to solve textual problems. If there's a problem with the pasuk, if there's a problem with, it should have been plural and it's singular, it should have been singular and it's plural, there's a word that doesn't seem to make any sense here, there's a word that's extra. In other words, Rashi used the Midrashim not just to teach over ideas and values of the Torah, not just to teach over Hashkafas of the Torah, not just to give over the messages and thought process of Torah, but to solve textual problems as well. Beyond that, he read every single word carefully, and he used the used the words carefully just to strengthen the point even more. I think there's even commentaries and books out there called "What's Bothering Rashi?" Because it's so clear that he was bothered with one word or one thing. He did a fantastic job with his textual analysis, and he synthesized, he integrated both the Midrashim as well as textual analysis. I think that's a lot of what it is. Beyond that, there's a fascinating conversation that takes place between Rashi and the Rashbam, his grandson. Now, the Rashbam had a different style of commentary. He was probably more along the lines of what we call pshat. He viewed himself probably even more of a pashtan. And the Rashbam said, I showed my grandfather all the stuff, all my Chidush Torah, all my commentaries on Chumash, and my grandfather said, well, if I had more time, I'd write a commentary, my commentary would look like this as well. Exactly what does Rashi mean? Is Rashi backtracking off of everything? There are those who say yes, Rashi was so blown away and impressed by his grandson's commentary that he backtracked and said, this is even better than my own, although it's very difficult to imagine. And there are those who say, God, you know, and Rashi, of course, didn't backtrack. He liked his own commentary, but, you know, it's his grandson. When I was a little boy, I used to draw pictures. My grandfather would hang them up in the refrigerator, whether or not they were good. In a certain sense, they claim the other extreme. Of course, he said, very nice, you know, you did a great job, but Rashi didn't back off. Of course Rashi didn't back off. He spent the whole life writing on his commentary. There is a middle approach I heard from Rabbi Shalom Carmi, who's a Rebbe in Bible professor and a Rebbe in Yeshiva University. He suggests something I liked a lot, which is kind of a synthesis of the two. Rashi recognized that the Rashbam had taken shot to the next level. He fully liked what he did. Rashi had a different goal. It was synthesizing drash and pshat together. It was tying the midrashim into the text. But he recognized that his grandson had taken pshat to the next level. It's been more of an evolvement, more of a development, that his grandson, the Rashbam, was writing commentaries with a different style. Rashi appreciated both styles and thought there was a need for both and was happy that his grandson took learning to the next level. Beyond Rashi's commentary on Chumash, which is, again, world-renowned, he has a commentary on Nach, he wrote almost all of Nach. There is a little bit of a debate, I think, from Eov, you know, from Perek Mem, Pasuk Chaf Heinan, parts of Ezra, parts of Divrei Hayamim are attributed to Rashi that many people believe it's not. But Rashi certainly wrote on all of Nach, although if you note, his commentary on Nach is not as rich as his commentary on Chumash, meaning he doesn't quote as many Midrash, he doesn't deal with as much, he doesn't bring as much, and it's not as well quoted, it's not as well known. In any event, I'm not sure why that is. Lastly, maybe almost lastly, second to last, maybe if I would tell you that there's no more important commentary on the Gemara than Rashi, it would probably be true, but still secondary to how important his commentary on the Chumash was. And therefore, Rashi, just in terms of appreciating the towering individual he was, not only is he does have the most, probably the most important commentary ever written in Jewish history on Chumash, he has probably the most important commentary ever written in Jewish history on Gemara. Maybe even, maybe, I don't know which is more important. It's difficult to imagine anything more important than his commentary on Chumash, but it's also more important, difficult to imagine anything more important than his commentary on Gemara. For starters, without Rashi, you can't begin. Just reading and translating the Gemara becomes very difficult. Rashi was really the first comprehensive commentary. Before that, there were commentaries who kind of wrote along the Gemara. You know, Rabbeinu Gershom from Germany, Rabbeinu Hananel from North Africa. They were kind of wrote along, summarizing the Gemara. Rashi was the first one who actually wrote a comprehensive commentary. And anywhere you get stuck, Rashi picks up and explains. You read the Gemara, you know what's going on. The first place you look to is Rashi. Rashi was revolutionary at that. He knew exactly where you'd get stuck. He knew exactly where you'd bump into a problem. He knew exactly how to solve it. If I'm not mistaken, since Rashi, until Steinsaltz and Art Scroll, which is the last, you know, last 50 years, no one put together a commentary like Rashi that just read and translated, explained the most simple reading of the Gemara. And again, because Rashi does that. Rashi explains the Gemara line by line. And although his predominant focus is to just give the simple reading of the Gemara, certainly takes into account a much more profound area as well. He dodges bullets. He explains, in other words, if there seems to be a contradiction between one Gemara here and a Gemara there, he'll explain the first Gemara in a certain way, which might not be the most simple reading of it, but in order to dodge the bullet, in order to prevent it from being a contradiction from the Gemara later on. Rashi does quote other Gemaras. He's fully aware of Shas all over the place, and you see it in his commentary, even though predominantly he seems to be focusing on a much more narrow picture. Lastly, about Rashi, he has tshuva svarim. He has responses where he was asked halachic questions and gave halachic answers. It's important to know he has them, but again, much, much more well-known, much, much more famous for his commentary on Chumash, his commentary on Gemara.